Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you once more for joining us on Queensberry Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com, and shortly I will be joined by James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. Is that intro, I mean, does that ever get, like, old for you guys, either the music or my little spiel there? It's pretty much memorized, but it's what I do. What do you want me to do? In any event, thanks again for joining us. I'm going to patch James on in here so we can get down to some boxing discussion. James.
Patrick.
Oh, I missed your voice, buddy.
What's going on? Well, we talked on the phone every day for the last 2 weeks.
Oh, well, yeah,
right,
but,
I know,
you know.
I know you didn't.
In a boxing context.
I mean. Oh, right. About boxing.
About boxing, though. About boxing. So, on a scale of one to all of them, how many fights were fixed last weekend? Go ahead.
Oh, I don't know. I can't. You know, we can't, you know, put ourselves at risk for, you know, a potential, like, lawsuit by claiming that there were any kind of, you know, possibly illegal shenanigans that went on. So I didn't see anything.
Well, you know, I mean, we're still trying to get that job with Golden Boy, so I don't really want to take it too far. But
yeah, so I mean, those were everything was.
Well, I did want to. Well, you know, before we get started, you know, Teddy Atlas had a take, and his take was...
I put the lime in the coconut, I mix it all up, I put the lime in the coconut, I drink it all down.
That was his take. So, you know, I'm just letting you know. But, more seriously, let's go right into this Danny Garcia versus Mauricio Herrera situation. What did you think? I mean... I don't really like using the word robbery. It kind of cheapens the word, and it gets used way too much, especially in fights that are kind of close, you know, could kind of go either way. And, you know, one guy kind of looks like he deserved to win. A lot of people used it for Chavez Jr. versus Brian Vera 1. I think that this is kind of a similar situation in that, it was a somewhat close fight that I think most people felt should have gone one way. What do you think?
Yeah. Exactly, like you said. I mean, it was, you know, the problem to me is not, like, ultimately, you know, who won the fight. It's kind of like the fact that the open scoring revealed that it was so obvious that the judges went in there with kind of a predetermined idea of who they were going to give every close round to. And obviously it was Garcia. It's kind of the fact that Herrera never really had a fair shake. And, you know, that's just not how it's, I mean, it's just unacceptable. But what are you going to do? I mean, it's that... You know, these are like contests where one competitor has an advantage, whether it's from, you know, Canelo against Trout or Chavez against Vera, or on Saturday, you know, clearly the A-side fighter was given, you know, favorable scorecards beyond the, a reasonable kind of, I think, sense. I mean, it just looks so obvious that whether, you know, one or two judges, you know, were giving him rounds that you just couldn't possibly have thought that he had won. But that said, I mean, that's my problem with it. You know, I to be honest with you, like, I didn't really score the fight, and I wanted to go back and watch it, and, you know, so I could actually have a stronger opinion, I guess, about the way that it should have been scored. But my sense was that, yeah, I mean, I kind of put it in the same category with Chavez Vera, and in neither case did I think it was they were, you know, like egregious robberies. It just kind of felt like close fight. If either guy had the edge, it was probably, you know, Vera or Herrera. So, you know, it didn't offend me that much, I guess, that Garcia won. It's just like how he won, you know, the fact that it was from the beginning, it just, you know, when the scorecards came out, they just weren't really reflecting reality, and it just kind of meant that, like, you know, unless Herrera just completely dominated him or knocked him out or something, you know, he wasn't going to win. He just wasn't going to win a close fight, and that's not right. So it's not surprising, but
Yeah, that's I totally agree. As I even was saying during the fight, I think it was either the seventh or eighth round. I had one round even at the time. I mean, I wasn't scoring it, you know, scrutinizing it super closely, but I was kind of scoring it. And during the fight, I had said, you know, I had it pretty much neck and neck at that point. But as far as, like, the actual fight was going, you know, kind of getting into the analysis of the fight, you know, heavy on the anal, of course, basically that pause, no need for a pause, that was overt. Basically that Mauricio Herrera, he obviously did not have a whole lot of punching power, and that was hurting him in the fight. If he would have had more punching power, I think that Danny Garcia would have been in some serious trouble. And that said, though, even without the punching power, it was, in my view, Mauricio Herrera scoring with the cleaner shots, scoring with the shots that seemed to be affecting Danny Garcia more than vice versa, and he basically just seemed to have most of the momentum. Danny Garcia never really seemed to be able to adjust to, admittedly, a very difficult style to adjust to. But, you know, it's just, yeah, I felt bad for Herrera because, like you said, especially with the open scoring and being able to see that as the fight was developing, it just became like, okay, this is pointless. Like, why did we even have this fight if Herrera can't win? That's the problem.
Yeah, that's kind of when I stopped scoring it, you know, and I wasn't, like, sitting there with a notepad, but in my head, you know, I was kind of keeping track. And through four rounds, I mean, I thought it was, like, 2-2-ish or maybe 3-1 Herrera, and then the cards come out, and it's 4-0 Garcia and 3-1 Garcia. So even though Danny had some rounds, and there were some close rounds, and even, you know, even though I was thinking 2-2, 3-1, I mean, they were close rounds. So it wasn't in my mind ever really, like, a blowout. I'm sure you could make a case for Garcia winning it, but it just like the odds that, you know, it's just one of the, I mean, judging from Twitter, it's like 80% of the people had Herrera winning, and then there's three judges and two of them have, you know, Garcia winning and one has it a draw. So, and just like the, you know, Chavez fight, I mean, almost everybody had Vera winning, three judges all have it Chavez, you know, Trout, Canelo, everyone was kind of like 50-50 on Twitter. Three judges have it all, you know, two of them wide, really wide for Canelo and the other one for Canelo. So it's just, the, you know, these kind of fights where there's clearly some kind of bias going on among, you know, the judges. It just doesn't, they're not jibing with, like, what the public is seeing. And that's not just, like, a TV versus ringside thing because, I mean, we've, you know, friends who are on Press Row or people you read online, you know, almost everybody was in consensus with, you know, thinking it was a close fight. A lot of people gave it to Herrera. I do think among fans and things, there does tend to be a backlash on against the A side, where, you know, when the underdog's exceeding expectations, and obviously this wasn't Danny Garcia's best night. I do think that there, if anything, there's a tendency to favor the underdog in the close rounds. But that said, I mean, the judges just go so far the other way toward the A side as a general rule. And it is one of the biggest problems in the sport because it's like you can't win a fight unless you just – it's not supposed to be like that. You don't have to win 12-0. You don't have to beat the guys that – you know, you just have to win the majority of the rounds and, you know, win on points. Yeah. And, you know, these guys just – they never have the chance to do that. But, I didn't, you know, like I said, I mean, I didn't necessarily think it was like a – I was really impressed with Herrera. And I think that, you know – this was probably kind of a trap fight after the big, you know, emotional Matisse win, and then everybody talking down the opponent, you know, talking down Herrera. I mean, Garcia was a heavy favorite going into this, and I think we probably underrated Herrera. I mean, I know I did based on the Mike Alvarado fight because I just thought Alvarado, you know, they basically brawled, and Alvarado was just bigger and really, you know, gave Herrera a pretty bad beating that night and took over and just, you know, was kind of superior in every way, even though it was a tough fight. And I just thought that Garcia would be better, that he would be able to, you know, obviously a different fighter than Alvarado, but that he would, you know, could adjust his style and do what he does best, you know, with his timing and his combinations and kind of, you know, not get sucked into the brawl that Alvarado did, but have an easier time outboxing Herrera. And obviously we were totally wrong, you know. I mean, Herrera, you know, held his own at least. So maybe some combination of, you know, everybody, including Garcia, underrating Herrera and the fact that, you know, he was looking at this as kind of a springboard for a bigger fight. Maybe he fought down to the level of competition somewhat. I mean, I think based on the track records, I mean, you have to, you know, think that Garcia has a little bit better pedigree as far as who he's beaten, especially with Matisse. But you know, Herrera coming in, I mean, it was he'd been in there with some top fighters, and you know, a guy, he got the win against Provodnikov, and he did, you know, maybe we were underrating him.
Yeah, I think that there's no question that it was kind of a, you know, some type of combination of all of these things. It's really tough to say exactly what percentage it was this, what percentage it was that. But I will say that before the fight even, our dude Matt Swain, HansLonda0351 on Twitter, who now, of course, is writing for Queensbury Rules regularly, thank goodness, because he's good, he even called before the fight. He did a preview, and he pretty much just nailed it. He said that Danny Garcia fights up or down to his level of competition. Why that is, I don't know. I don't think he knows either. Does anybody really know? But that's kind of what he does. I mean, he had a really good night against Lucas Matisse, who most of us rated very highly, and I think rightfully so, because Matisse had some, you know, solid performances. Even in his losses, he seemed to have some decent performances, except for the Judah fight. Thought that wasn't very good. But regardless, fought well against Matisse, fought really crappy against Zab Judah, and kind of a lot of us, that's what led most of us to not picking Garcia against Matisse, I think. And then, you know, looked great against Amir Khan, looked great in the Morales rematch, didn't really look so hot, you know, in most of the rounds of the first Morales fight, was on my card on his way to losing that fight, and Morales had the momentum, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Looked like shit against Kendall Holt,
answer.
Too.
Yeah, that Kendall Holt fight was, like, not fun to watch. I was there. I lost interest pretty quickly. And, yeah, all of these things, it's just, how do you account for these inconsistencies?
Well, I don't know. You know, the thing is, like, he never really has had a completely flawless performance, because let's not forget, even against, I mean, maybe the Morales rematch, but again, that's Eric Morales at whatever age, you know, after so many wars at a weight that he, you know, much higher than where he fought in his prime. So, you know, I think it's at the time, I mean, I think Garcia proved a lot against Matisse, but at the time when Morales rematch, I mean, I wasn't putting stock in that, like, whoa, what a great knockout, you know, I mean, I was still thinking it's troubling that he went the distance the first fight, you know,
yeah.
Although, you know, Morales held his own with Maidana too, so, but, you know, I Garcia, I mean, even in his greatest wins, there were tough rounds against Matisse, and that was a close fight. And, you know, and against Khan, I mean, he was getting, you know, the speed was overwhelming him until he caught Khan with this perfect punch, you know. So it's always kind of been about the combination of his, you know, temperament and his timing and having some power. But he still has not, you know, and I've, you know, that's the thing. Like, I go back and forth on Garcia thinking, like, man, he's, you know, the one guy who maybe could have the talent to, like, you know, step up and kind of be a pound-for-pound guy and challenge Floyd. I mean, that's the ultimate goal. At the same time, thinking, like, maybe we've all, like, overrated him on these two performances against, you know, a vulnerable fighter in Khan and then a guy in Matisse who, you know, we projected some of Matisse's greatness, you know? So I don't know. I mean, I think Garcia's still kind of a mystery, and you're right. I mean, he has had inconsistent performances, and this, you know, is right in that category. But he has been fighting, you know, pretty high level of opposition, and including Herrera, who I think was better than, you know, the way he was regarded going into this fight. I'm just trying to remember, because I don't know if I saw, or maybe I saw it and I just forgot, but I have no memory of that Herrera losing to Kareem Mayfield. Which was kind of another strike against him if you were looking at his resume going in, you know, the fact that he got decisioned by Mayfield. I mean,
yeah.
So I don't remember that fight, so I don't know, like, how good Mayfield's still undefeated, and he's going to be on HBO. He's an, you know, upcoming contender. So I don't know, maybe, you know, Herrera's just a good fighter. I mean, if you look at the guys he's lost to or had close fights to, you know, Alvarado and Provodnikov, I mean, those guys are top of the divisions now, or they were.
Well, I mean, going forward then, I mean, what are we looking for from Danny Garcia? I mean, is this just kind of who he is then? I mean, are we going to throw him in with Floyd Mayweather, or perhaps the winner of Mayweather-Maidana, which should be Floyd Mayweather? Are we going to throw him in with Floyd Mayweather and then he's going to perform far better than we thought? I mean, it's puzzling. I'm racking my brain all night, every night, thinking about this, James. Help me.
Well, and, you know, he looked great against Zab Judah for the first, like, six rounds or whatever, and then kind of, you know, gasped late and let Judah get back in the fight. So, yeah, when he's doing his – and, some of the things in the moments that he has in the ring, like the punch against Khan and what he did against, you know, stretch most of the Matisse fight, and, you know, when he looks good, he does look like a fighter who possesses something special that could, you know, be difficult for even a great opponent. You know, because he kind of sets everything up through his boxing, and he's all about, you know, timing and the punches, and I think Garcia eventually will move toward a big fight, but I guess this performance definitely made him look a little bit more vulnerable as far as, you know, is he going to make it to the Mayweather fight with his undefeated record intact? I mean, this kind of throws some questions, in that, but he did fight the toughest guy, you know, the guy who was supposed to be the toughest guy in the division in Matisse, and, you know, got past that test.
Well, you know, I lost in so much of this shuffle, and it happens all the time. This is not, you know, anything new or anything that crazy, really. It happens a lot where a guy performs in a way that we're not really expecting, and we're like, something's wrong with him. He did something wrong, or somebody this or that. When in reality, I mean, most importantly, we need to congratulate Mauricio Herrera, because he turned in a really good performance, and not just an unexpected performance, but I mean, he fought his ass off. He did a lot of things really right in there. You know, he figured out exactly what it was going to take to stifle Danny Garcia's offense, and he did it, and he kept up with it for most of the fight, and he closed strong too. So, you know, at the end of the day, we do kind of need to give Mauricio Herrera a pat on the back.
Definitely. Definitely, and I mean, and I think the performance will get him, you know, other big fights.
I hope so. Well, let me ask. I don't know if I'm, you know, if this is.
But
even
let me
really
ask you.
Worth...
Well, let me. Can I ask
go
you
ahead,
a question?
Ahead. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing about going. I thought that our one-time guest William Detloff had an interesting comment on Twitter, after the fight on Saturday, where he was like, you know, basically saying, like, yeah, it's messed up and it's, you know, a robbery and all that. But like, let's be honest, like, we didn't really care because I think the implication, like, we want to see Garcia going forward more than we want to see Herrera. So it's like these things happen. It's boxing, you know. And, I mean, I just wanted to ask you, like, I mean, who would you rather see in a big fight? Because I kind of disagree. I mean, I don't think it's okay what happened, but I do agree with him. I mean, if you ask me, like, do I want to see Mayweather-Garcia or Mayweather-Herrera next? Obviously, I want to see Mayweather-Garcia between those two. So, I mean, who would you rather see in a big fight? You scored the fight for Herrera. So, I mean, would you rather see the guy that you thought won? Or do you think Danny kind of deserves that of, like, he's more accomplished, like, he's a young fighter, you know, champion. This was, like, his bump in the road. He got the hometown decision. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's kind of a bit of a complicated situation, you know, in terms of figuring out who I want or who this guy wants, just because it's kind of like Mayweather versus Maidana or Mayweather versus Khan. One guy seemingly, quote-unquote, deserves it more, but the other guy might actually put up a better fight, at least for however long it lasts. You know what I mean? Like, it's tough to really balance that out in my head. On one hand, I feel kind of like Mauricio Herrera should have won that fight. He should now currently be the junior welterweight champion, and he should, you know, be first in line, I guess, or ahead in line for a shot against Floyd Mayweather, ahead of Danny Garcia, that is. But does he really have the tools to do much to Floyd Mayweather aside from maybe just frustrating him a little bit? Not really. I don't think so. I mean, maybe we just have to see more, and I'm not trying to sell Mauricio Herrera short because, again, that was a great performance. But at the end of the day, we'll get to the Canelo Angulo thing later, but you kind of have to factor in who it was against and what that person looked like. It was a great performance against one of the more crappy versions of Danny Garcia that we've seen. So...
Yeah, and I don't want to make the old Roy Jones excuse, but like how, you know, it's obviously easier for Herrera to get up for Garcia than it is the other way around. And I mean, I know that
hey,
you got to show up and fight, you know, but it's like it's the same thing with Brian Vera and that Chavez. I mean, it goes to show you, even if you're kind of the more talented fighter, you know, if you don't, some of these guys have the ability to, you know, give the world class guys, and I'm not saying Chavez is, but I think Garcia at 140, I mean, he is the champion, you know. I mean, you can't just, motherfucker. Well, that's about all I had to say about that. Sorry.
Did your train of thought get dropped at the station?
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens to me all the time, like mid-sentence. It's the fucking pot, dude.
Haven't done that in
years. No, we don't do that, any of that shit. I mean, like, from high school, when we used to do it in high school.
Of course, yeah. Fuck,
there goes the job. It's really tough to reconcile and really tough to figure this out in my head. And, I mean, boxing is, at the end of the day, it's tough to say deserve all that much, because does anybody really deserve any of this shit? Boxing doesn't work that way. It's not a sport that works off of deserving and merit. And unfortunately, you know, I wish it did, but it doesn't really. And
yeah,
that said, you know,
and,
as far as, like, I wanted to ask you about the open scoring, though. I mean, we don't need to get too off topic here, but I really am curious, like, what your take on this open scoring business is, because I literally have put thought into it, and I can't really think of too many instances where it's needed or where it really makes sense. You know, I mean, and especially in this fight, I mean, on one hand, yeah, I guess it forces one guy to fight harder, but, I mean, really, should a guy need open scoring to fight hard to win a fight?
No,
should
and you know, another thing
hard
is like
to win it in the first place.
It's problematic because, like, you know, the open scoring after 8 rounds, it was almost like at the point where it's like, all right, Herrera, you need like a knockout, and he's not a knockout puncher. He doesn't have that kind of power. And of course, Garcia does have power, and he's been shown before to be a great counter puncher and, you know, great timing. So what if they had, you know, the scorecards force Herrera, who by most accounts was winning the fight, then has to be more aggressive, and he opens himself up to get knocked out. Well, then do we all say, like, what a great fight. Like, Garcia, you know, faced adversity and he ended up knocking the guy out. But really it was like the open scoring influenced what happened in the ring, you know. And I mean, I'm sure there's times, I guess the argument would be like, well, if a guy's getting screwed after like 8 rounds, you know, who does have the ability to knock his opponent out. But, you know, I don't know. There's no real good reason for it, no. And it sucks a lot of the drama out. And I think the most troubling thing is it does change the way that the fighters fight, and it really only benefits, I think, the guy who has a big lead, which will tend to be, like, in these kind of situations, the A side. I mean, I thought Canelo beat Trout, but the scorecards were, you know, incredibly lopsided for what was actually happening in the ring, and basically after 8 rounds told Trout that he had no chance to win the fight unless he went for a knockout, which is another guy who doesn't really have that kind of power, and he's not that kind of fighter. So, you know, I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, I don't understand what the logic behind it is. And I think it would make it much easier, actually, for judges to do some kind of shenanigans.
I just don't really get it. You know, to me, it's not really much different from Lawrence Cole, that zombified, no-neck-having motherfucker who refs fights consistently in the state of Texas, and I think in other states as well, and keeps getting jobs despite failing at his fucking job all the time. It's no different than that guy walking up to Juan Manuel Marquez, covering his microphone and saying, you're ahead if you want to quit. It's basically just a legal way of doing that. I mean, I know that's a bit of an exaggeration, but I just don't see any reason for it. Like, just get rid of it. Get it out of here. We don't need it. We don't want it. Nobody wants
no,
it. Really.
No one likes it, so...
So, I mean, maybe we should be asking the fighters this. Obviously, Mauricio Herrera is probably going to answer that question with that it's stupid and I don't want it. Maybe Danny Garcia says, I love it, but I don't get it. Anyway, I don't want to take us too far off track there, but I thought it was bullshit.
It always is.
Well,
I think we have this exact same
bullshit
conversation after Canelo and Trout.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, speaking of bullshit or potential bullshit, I guess I should say Deontay Wilder's KO of Malik Scott. You know, my opinion of it when it happened, kind of strong, hasn't changed a whole lot, though I'm kind of keeping my mind open that it was a legitimate KO and maybe Malik Scott's chin really just is, you know, dust in the wind, Kansas. But, well, I mean, really, I don't know. What did you think about that?
Well, it was disappointing because it looked so awesome when it happened live, but when you watched it close, it was like the replay didn't really do it justice. I mean, I think that the left hook hit him on the side of the head, if anything, was probably the punch that really hurt him and put him on the ground. And then the right hand, I feel like it was maybe the left hand scrambled his brain, and then the right hand just was the force, even though it was mostly blocked by his gloves, was kind of the force needed to actually set his body on the ground. I don't know. I mean, you know, I've never been hit with a Deontay Wilder left hook in the side of my head, so sure, if I was, I'd probably get knocked out by it, you know, and the punch did land. The first punch did land, so, I mean, it didn't look good, but I don't think it was any different than, like, Victor Ortiz against Luis Collazo taking that punch, which was a good punch, but then, like, basically, like, just chilling on his knee and deciding not to continue. It looked like Scott didn't make a whole lot of effort to get up from it, but, you know, we know that Deontay has power. It's not inconceivable that, you know, that combination of the left to the head and then the right kind of, you know, on his gloves or, you know, some part of it partially landing. I mean, the right hand really didn't look like it landed other than just maybe to knock his momentum down, you know, toward the ground that where he was already going. So I don't know. It's just hard to, like, really say 100% that the guy was cheating or it was a phantom punch or, you know, Scott just took a dive. But, you know, after the Chisora fight, I mean, there, you know, Scott had a lot of sympathy because in the whole – the big story was, you know, though it was, you know, a count of nine and he didn't get the full count and all this stuff. But what was kind of lost in all that was the fact that Chisora – was able to, you know, hurt Scott pretty badly and have him at least to the point where he couldn't get up until nine, you know? I mean, and Chisora, yeah. And I think Wilder's a much bigger puncher than Chisora. So I think there were some questions about Scott's, you know, durability or chin or however you want to say it. And I know a lot of people were looking at, you know, well, he's like a really tricky, you know, he's a good boxer. But he never really fought anyone. So I don't know. It's not like that absurd that the result ends up being Wilder KO1, you know, however you want to look at it.
Well, yeah, and like you said, especially given Wilder's resume, I mean, obviously it's inflated some, obviously. You know, needless to say, he doesn't have 31 knockouts over absolute top tier opposite. I mean, there aren't 30 or 31 top tier heavyweights, period. But regardless, there's without question, Deontay Wilder's got punching power. And, you know, I'm not going to take it to the realm where, like, I start getting DM'd by Deontay Wilder, you know. You want, like, get in the ring with him. Fuck that. The other guy will fuck me up. I'm not going to get in the ring with him. But I'm not questioning his power.
Is he DMing
to
people?
Me, like, what's that?
What was he?
No.
He
wasn't. I'm just saying. I'm just prefacing that so I don't get totally embarrassed on the internet again.
Before you call it a mockery and say that the fight was fixed? And
it was totally fixed. So don't Curtis Woodhouse me. But anyway, It just didn't really look right. You know, I'm not going to call it a fix. I'm not going to say he took a dive. I think that the most likely thing that happened was basically what you said. The punch landed clean. It probably hurt. I don't know that it was enough to totally scramble his ass, but it was probably enough for him to go down and say, I'm good. That's enough. I'm good. You know, and that's okay. Totally against that. I'm not going to force a guy to fight if he's done and doesn't want to fight anymore, you know. But it was disappointing because especially looking forward to the fight, you know, before the fight we were thinking, a lot of us were thinking anyway, this is an opportunity to find out something about either of these guys. And really, I don't think we found out anything new at all except for that maybe Malik Scott's chin is far weaker than a lot of us realized.
We found out that next time we hear, you know, X versus Malik Scott, we don't need to all say, like, this will be the greatest test of his career, you know.
Yeah, savvy
veteran boxer. I mean, it's
it was
disappointing. So, like you said, either he belly flopped or he was genuinely just destroyed by one punch that, you know, didn't really land that clean.
Well, he sure did a lot of, like, you know, shuffling around and not throwing at all. Before
yeah,
that, too. I mean, I think he threw
that,
a total of, like, five punches or something. I'm like, what the fuck? Whatever. Anyway,
if they really are going to make... I mean, I was reading they're going to try to make Deontay against the winner of the Areola and Stiverne rematch. And that's great. Great fight. To me, that's a huge step up from Malik Scott.
Yes.
either guy.
And already I would say that, we don't know a whole shitload about Stibburn past that first fight with Areola, but, at the very least, I think that we could say that both of those guys, Stibburn and Areola, have more proven chins in better situations than Malik Scott. And if Deontay Wilder winds up doing that to one or either of those guys, that has far greater implications.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, it was disappointing in any event. I don't want to beat the dead horse, but so over the course of the next, I don't know, year and a half, do you think that we could see Deontay Wilder at the top of the heavyweight division, potentially challenging a Klitschko and not getting lapped at?
I mean, he's like almost already there as far as the, a Klitschko opponent. I mean, I think there's been worse than Deontay Wilder in the last couple years. But a win over somebody like Stiverne and Areola would really, I think, legitimize him. So, yeah, I mean, if he knocked out Chris Areola and it wasn't just like a TKO, but, I mean, really hurt him badly or whatever in the early rounds, I mean, I think a lot of people would start getting hyped up and at least say, like, all right, well, if he lands a punch on Klitschko, it could get interesting. Klitschko is like Mayweather. They're going to just be huge favorites no matter who they fight because we haven't seen them really in competitive fight in so long. But if you look at as a student of the game, Patrick, if you just look at the history, everybody loses long enough. So it's not inconceivable. And a lot of times it happens to a big puncher with somebody who's just an excellent boxer who's been winning mostly wide decisions for a long time. Anything can happen. That's boxing. It doesn't have to be like, it's not like other sports where it's like a dominant team will almost always beat, a crappy team so I don't think it's ridiculous at all, man. If he beats the Areola and Stiverne, then bring it on. Klitschko is going to be a heavy favorite. Some people will laugh at it, but who's Klitschko fighting next? This Lapai dude? Like, who's that guy?
Yeah, they're having to. They're having
who was
to
that guy? Last year, who tested positive for roids. Even Povetkin was like the most accomplished guy. Povetkin.
Come on.
Who kind of was like, up and coming, and then took a step back in competition for a couple years, and then eventually got the Klitschko fight, and was just totally. Oh, that was just such an ugly fight too. It's almost hard to blame Povetkin for it, but. It was just garbage, and there's no reason for me to look at a guy like Povetkin. I mean, if Povetkin fought Wilder, I'm not going to say right now, 100%, I think Povetkin would school Wilder, even though he, fought on a higher level as a pro and was an accomplished, amateur himself and all that. Like, I just don't think these guys are that good, so I don't think it's that absurd that Wilder, with just his big punch and not a whole lot else, would be kind of among the best available challengers for the Klitschkos.
Yeah, as far as Klitschko's next opponent, I'm not very familiar. They're having to dig pretty deep to find guys for him to face that he hasn't already faced. I mean, and as somebody who's been a kind of on and off supporter of Vladimir Klitschko, it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher for me to stand behind him, because the fights are getting increasingly shitty. I can't defend it anymore, and I've been a pretty big defender.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I just can't defend
there's
the guy, man.
That.
I mean, I appreciate it, but he's just not even like in my book. I'll take a Mike Tyson over the Klitschko brothers every day.
Even if just in terms of watching it, even if you're not picking Mike Tyson to beat him, it's just even just to watch it is like ugh. Come on, it's getting bad.
Yeah, it's...
Well, okay, just kind of taking your best guess.
Like, here's one of my objections to the Klitschko... Sorry, just... But one of my objections to the Klitschko... A lot of what they do is, you couldn't even translate it to another weight class because so much of it relies on, the size disparity.
Yeah. No,
obviously, there's been exceptions that they fought, but...
Well, I mean, and that's their fault or anything like that. But at the same time, yeah, no.
No,
you're
100% I mean, that's how
right.
What the heavyweight, what that's the heavyweight division. But it's just, you know.
Yeah, you're 100% right, and that does count.
It's like watching that kind of shit that he, in the Povetkin fight. That's not like the type of like great. You know, I mean, like just. I mean, I'm just saying, like, not even like I see more greatness in fighters who are like less like accomplished, or you would say, you know, because people now are looking at the Klitschko's as they kind of wind down and trying to figure out where they rate among all-time heavyweights and things like that. And I mean, I would rate Tyson over both Klitschko brothers. And I mean, I know that's like not that crazy to say, it's not that controversial, but there's people who would be like, Klitschko's are top 10 and Tyson was like overrated and was exposed and all that. But it's like in his prime, like he was great, you know? And I can't really say that. The most I'll give the Klitschko's is like they were dominant. I'm not even going to use the word great.
For sure. I mean, in terms of like an all-time sense or whatever, yeah, I don't really have any question. I've seen people rate them very highly, one or both of them very highly. Like, when I mean very highly, I mean top 10 or top 5.
Yeah.
And I just think that's absurd. That's absolutely absurd.
No, I'm not even that much of a historian, but I wouldn't rank them top 10.
No, it's absurd.
I think it's ridiculous.
Don't really care.
If you look at the guys you would have to put them ahead of when you start to get in the back of that top 10.
Exactly. It's not like heavyweight is the absolute deepest division all time ever, but at the same time, just I don't really even care too much about the dominance or the longevity when it's over opposition that sucks. It doesn't matter then, you know. As far as Wilder goes, taking your best guess, do you think that he's legitimate or not? Like, do you think he's going to be able to rise and be a heavyweight champion some point in the future?
I don't really have a strong opinion on it one way or the other. You know, I think he could beat, I'll just say this, like, I think he could beat the winner of the Areola-Stivern fight. But,
yeah. I think that that's
hard,
a big opportunity if they take
bank on a guy that we've never seen like really take a punt, big punch, or have an opponent really who could, you know, take his punch. And somewhere out there, there's somebody with a chin who's going to be able to, you know, keep coming forward and throwing punches. And until we see kind of what he can deal, how he can deal with something like that, it's just hard to say. When a fighter's never faced any adversity, really, you know, aside from a couple of like just weird tense moments very early in fights, you know, but against guys he kind of knew he could knock out. So I don't really have a gut on it because it's like you said, I mean, the heavyweight, it's kind of different than other divisions. It's just so thin behind like the top level that, you know, even to go from a Malik Scott, especially, you know, this version that we just saw, up to a guy like Areola, I mean, I think that's a big leap. And you know, in fact, he hasn't even been up there yet, and he's kind of just now going to get that. It's hard to say, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and any way you slice it, it's a leap, I think, in the heavyweight division. It's really tough to move a guy along, quote-unquote, properly. There's just such a huge gap between the top and even just the middle, much less the top and the bottom. So in that sense, I do kind of feel for Deontay Wilder because – He doesn't really have a chance to be developed like that, you know. And if he does, he has done it right and done it off TV in the past. But, yeah, it's tough.
Well, yeah. We haven't really seen, like, him, like, be able to, you know, that he knows how to win fights other than just landing his, like, bomb right hands, you know. I mean, and that's, I think, a little bit worrisome just because you think eventually – I mean, you know what I mean? Like, if the guy was just, like, a super slick boxer and he was just dominating everybody and, you know, scoring a lot of knockouts but showing a lot of, like, skill as well. But that's not really Deontay Wilder. You know, he just looks like kind of this athletic specimen. He still looks a little bit awkward, like, moving around the ring and stuff, and he just has huge power when he connects with his punches. And I guess he's got a good jab and all that, but, you know, no one's confusing him for Muhammad Ali out there.
Well – I was going to say a joke right there, but I held back because it would have been bad. It would have been on par with the Bob Arum joke I told a while back that got no laughs. I will say this for Deontay Wilder, and I said it before the fight. He comes into every fight in good shape, and that is something that not every heavyweight can do. these days. It's not something every heavyweight does. And that's so stupid that that it's come to a point where it's like you can't expect a fighter to be in shape. But unfortunately, that's where it is. And I, of course, have to point out the last, you know, thing that I have to say on this anyway, is the whole get your popcorn ready paper bag. I mean, that's about how long it took. It actually took, the fight was shorter than it takes on most microwaves to cook a bag of popcorn.
That's not a good one to do that and then get knocked out in like a minute.
No, it's not. I mean, really, that's, buddy. I almost feel bad for him on that, but he brought it on himself. Nothing you can do.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of kind of embarrassing, I guess, I wouldn't be embarrassed for him because I love Daniel Ponce de Leon, and I think that that's a dude that brings it no matter what, but probably a little bit embarrassing that he was, I think he was either a 2 or 3 to 1 favorite over Juan Manuel Lopez. Very fun, short fight, but damn, that knockdown was just like, holy shit, he got absolutely flattened.
Yeah.
Stopped perhaps a little prematurely. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty awesome. Probably like the highlight of the card on Saturday, you know, which was weird because we were all dreading it. But, you know, I didn't think Juanma could even like get off that kind of power anymore. And then when he was getting, honestly, in the second round, you know, he got knocked down. It wasn't like a you know, a huge knockdown, but, you know, Juanma went down and De Leon was being kind of aggressive, and I was just, like, thinking that it was going to just turn into a total beatdown, and eventually Lopez would get stopped and just kind of landed that miracle punch and right on the button. And it looked bad. But that said, you know, De Leon got up and seemed to be, you know, on his way to recovering, even though he kind of slipped back down again. So I don't know. It was kind of a debatable stoppage. I mean, it didn't look like he was taking a lot of clean punches. He took some shots on the ropes, though, and that's the whole thing, man. If you get knocked down twice and you're badly hurt and your back's against the ropes, even if you're covering up and you're, like, you know, parrying some of the punches, if your opponent's sitting there just throwing, unloading on you 10, 15 punches and you don't throw anything back, sometimes the referee's going to just, you know, you're putting him in that position to have to make that call. Now, I do think there was a sentiment probably in Puerto Rico that, you know, I mean, we saw what happened with the judges in the Garcia fight. I mean, I don't think there was any hesitancy to stop that fight and award Juanma the TKO there, where maybe had the roles been reversed, he maybe would have given him a little bit more rope. But I didn't think it was that outrageous, you know. I do think De Leon probably could have continued, but, you know, kind of a 50-50 to me.
That's kind of how I felt about it. I thought the stoppage was early, but I wasn't that upset about it because at the end of the day, if you're going down twice, even if that second knockdown was a little shaky as far as knockdowns go, I mean, that wasn't the cleanest knockdown either, but officially he was down twice. And if, you know, you're down twice in a round against a Puerto Rican in Puerto Rico, I mean, and that I'm not just speaking just about Puerto Rico, an American in America, an English dude in England, whatever. You know, I think that that's just asking for trouble. So I didn't like the stoppage, but
you know,
I can't argue that much.
Yeah, unfortunately, a fighter should be allowed to like defend themselves and all that without like, oh, you have to throw a punch. You know, I mean, if you're defending and you're blocking most of the punches, like while you're trying to recover, I mean, that should be enough that, you know, be allowed to go. But we've seen it time and time again. I mean, that's kind of like the cue for the referee to stop it when guys are hurt and they've been down. You're on the ropes. You know, it's a dicey situation. And, you know, De Leon wasn't really throwing back. It was kind of reminiscent of the Abner Mares-Johnny Gonzalez stoppage, if I remember it. Or maybe I'm thinking of something else.
No, it was similar, although actually Mares got knocked down again, like legitimately, and got hit with a pretty good shot before it was stopped.
I'm thinking of something. I can't remember what I'm thinking of. But another fight where a guy was kind of like, you know, the fighter was throwing like 10 punches on him on the ropes, and like right as he was kind of going to throw one back, the referee stopped it and he protested.
There have been a number of situations like that. Off the top of my head, one I can readily recall is Joe Calzaghe versus Peter Manfredo Jr. Like it was stopped as Manfredo was throwing like a 5-punch combination. You know, things like that happen.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But yes, either way, at the very least, he was going to be down pretty, you know, he was going to be in a hole.
Yeah.
Pause.
It could have turned into a war, man, if he had been allowed to continue. Because actually, I think De Leon may have been able to recover, and knowing how vulnerable Wanma is, you know, who knows what would have happened. But
and that was
great win, great win for him. I mean, it was nice to see, even though it's probably going to just end up resulting in more punishment that he'll take in the long run. And I don't really like his prospects of, you know, retaining his entire mental capacity as an older gentleman. But that said, it was good to see him back in the, you know, in the win column. And I think you could tell,
yeah,
you know, things have gotten pretty dire for his career. And, you know, to bask in the glory at least this one more time was kind of nice to see, because I appreciate the kind of fighter that he is, you know.
Oh, yeah. He seems like a likable dude, too. He just seems like a likable guy, lovable guy.
Love that.
So it's nice to see, oh, I'm in love with him. It's nice to see him back in the win column, and it was unexpected, and that was probably round of the year. At least so far. I know
so
we're
far,
only in March, but still, like, that was a big round, man. I it's not really that often, even in kind of crazy fights, where I literally jump up off the couch and go, oh, shit! You know, and I did that.
Yeah, yeah. When he turned the tide, it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was good stuff. So I got to hand it to him. It was nice to see him, you know, get another win and all that stuff. It was nice.
Well, they weeded out all those referees who, you know, were gambling on his fights before. And so now, you know, man's getting a fair shake. He's back in the
finally,
win column.
I'm getting sick of these referees betting on Wanma Lopez fights. It's getting out of hand. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Did you wind up catching the Tomas Adamek fight?
I saw a deal of it. Yeah, I mean, I recorded it and kind of half watched it, to be honest, because I'd I don't know what was going on, but yeah, I caught it. I mean, kind of. I think that was kind of what I expected. How about you?
Yeah, I expected Adamek to do a little bit better, but. But, yeah, I caught it, and to be honest, I kind of – my attention started fading a little bit, too. My attention actually got caught during the broadcast. Like, I mean, I was kind of like, you know, Glaskov's basically walking him around the ring and winning somewhat easily on my card. And then I look, and I see they're talking to Larry Hazard, and his scorecard is for Adamek. And I'm like, whoa, wait, what? What the fuck?
Really?
That actually caught my attention more than the fight did. I was just like, maybe I should start watching this, because is this closer than I think? No, it wasn't really closer than I thought. Larry Hazard and BJ Flores are just, you know, sorry guys, you're idiots.
Yeah, what I saw, it looked like Glaskov was pretty handily winning. What I thought that Glaskov was pretty handily winning, you know, the rounds that I was watching.
Yeah, and well, what kind of surprised me was Glaskov was the guy who fought to a draw with Malik Scott. What was it, maybe about a year ago, roughly?
That's right.
And that was like, you know, it was a decent fight, actually, in terms of action. You know, it was fairly back and forth. I thought Glaskov might have been able to take it. But regardless, you know, I was kind of interested in that sense, because I was like, all right, well, Malik Scott's getting the shot against Deontay Wilder. Glaskov's getting the shot against Adamek, as it were, you know, at least in terms of, like, you know, who was the more popular guy in both of those matchups and stuff like that. So I was kind of interested in exactly what Glaskov was going to show against a guy in Tomas Adamek that's kind of fading, getting older, not big for a heavyweight in the first place, and also on top of that, recently has gotten you know, a handful of fortunate decisions.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Decisions that maybe could have gone the other way or should have gone the other way. So, I mean, I don't really know exactly where to take that, but is Adamek done then? I mean, he's been talking about retirement, and I'm not entirely sure that I would argue with him on that.
Adamek, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think he's been done on the kind of on the highest level, you know. And like you, I mean, I thought he lost to Steve Cunningham and Eddie Chambers,
mm-hmm.
but and you know, ever since that Klitschko fight, I think that was kind of the it slowed him down a lot. You know, I mean, he just took a ton of punishment from a much bigger guy, and you know, a pretty good puncher too. And I'm just looking up now because I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I remember his first fight back against Nagy Aguilera. He was like they were brawling for a bit, and then against Travis Walker. You know, and so he's like he's been in some tough fights against like guys who are not really, you know, world-class fighters. And the two times he did fight kind of good boxers, Eddie Chambers with one arm, I thought was outboxing him. And
yeah.
Steve Cunningham.
I thought that was pretty clear, personally.
I thought so, too. So he hasn't looked good in a while. He's looked kind of like as he is, like shop-worn, you know, and older, and just not, you know, I don't think heavyweight was ever going to be his best weight, you know, his best division. But I don't know why I thought going into this, thought Glasgow would have enough to rough him up and get the win. And yeah, I guess I do remember he fought Malik Scott and then Tor Hammer. That was like the first quit job that he did. So I'd seen Glasgow a couple times. And
yeah, he's a pretty watchable guy, you know.
Yeah.
He was a good effort. And I brought it up before, but, you know, even against Michael Grant, like the Michael Grant, that Michael Grant that is basically a perpetual butt of a joke at this point, he had some struggles against Michael Grant and looked wobbled a couple times. Michael Grant's a dude who's been slapping with his punches, you know, ever since he came about. And so I was highly skeptical about as far as what Adamek would be able to do. You know, I was highly skeptical about that at heavyweight in the first place. He's undersized. He's not a super hard puncher, even a cruiserweight or light heavyweight. So, anyway, the guy's at this point, I want to say 37 or 38. He's taken a lot of punishment and gotten beat up, even in fights that he's won. Nah, you know, we know how it is on our show. We're not going to be sitting there with pitchforks and shit calling for guys to retire, but I wouldn't argue it. He's had a good career. He had a lot of fans show up and watch him fight. He's been a pretty popular guy overall, had a lot of support of Polish folks, especially in Chicago, New Jersey. So, yeah, at this point, calling it a day, I'd be cool with it.
Yeah, or I'd be down with him fighting somebody like Szpilka, that other Polish dude. You know, I mean,
Fuck, you should be a matchmaker. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he could get in some winnable fights against some fun guys, but he's kind of done on the top level. And as far as Glasgow, I mean, I don't know. I don't think I kind of doubt what his ceiling is going to end up being as well, if he'll ever be able to really be a legit, like, top 10 guy. I think that's kind of doubtful, but, you know, he'll have the opportunity going forward, I guess, to get involved in some bigger fights and, you know, maybe try to build his own fan base or whatever. He'll get the support from Main Events and NBC Sports.
Oh, yeah.
Mannix will be calling for you know, talking about how the Klitschko brothers are ducking him and stuff.
Oh, man. I can barely handle, sorry, but, you know, I'm not gonna use the show as a microphone to start bashing this guy. Well, yes, I will. But
all right, sorry.
Man,
sorry.
I can't fucking stand that guy. Anyway, last week we got...
No, good guy, though.
Totally.
Guy.
Oh, great guy. Yeah, Robert Blake is a good guy. Last week we pretty much got totally effed out of the show. I briefly explained it on Twitter because I was pissed and I didn't want to talk about it. But basically what had happened was after the time change last week, I scheduled the show. I don't know exactly what happened or exactly what the problem was. Still haven't even heard back from Blog Talk about it. But it seemed to me like their freaking time on their server or their server clock or whatever hadn't been changed. So I set the time for the normal time and then didn't realize till like basically right in front of the friggin' or right before the friggin' show that there was nothing. Like, it was already, like, it was going to be an hour after I had scheduled it, and blah, blah, blah. I was pissed. Anyway, so we got screwed out of doing the show last week, which sucks because we had a lot of stuff to say about Canelo versus Angulo, so we're just going to do it now. So what did you think?
All right.
Yeah, that was a good setup. Huh?
Fair enough.
It's like 90 seconds of talking for nothing.
What did you think?
You know, I saw that a lot of people seem to be thinking that Alfredo Angulo took a he took money to like not fight hard or something like that.
Really?
There were a number of people I saw that were saying things like that. It wasn't like I'm just picking out, you know, one person said that and I'm rolling with it, and that was the prevailing thought. A lot of people were saying stuff like that, and saying he didn't look right. But I agree with that part. I think that he didn't look right, and I think that there was two main components of that. The first one being that Saul Alvarez, he stepped up in, like, the first moments of the fight and started throwing really hard. Like, he was saying, all right, dude, you know, you were talking all this shit about how you're going to knock me out, and now I'm going to step up and hurt you, like, moments into the fight, and he did. That's what it looked like anyway. He basically wobbled Angulo, which not a lot of people expected. And on top of that, he just never really let up over the first half of the fight. He stayed more aggressive than he normally is. He, you know, he did well. And then the second component of it was, or at least in my view, that I think that there's a strong possibility that Angulo could be fading very quickly in his career. He's taken a lot of punishment. He's had close ones with guys that he probably shouldn't have been fighting close with. And, yeah, I think that all of these things added together, and we might have been expecting a little bit too much from him going into the fight and expecting it to be this war. So, anyway, that's my perspective. I think that we need to be looking more closely at him from here forward. What do you think?
I do think that, Canelo had a lot of advantages in this fight, and we said that the week before. You know, I mean, he has faster hands, he has better defense, and he's to me, you know, a pretty big hitter himself. And Gulo's a tough guy and has stood in there and taken punches from some guys who can punch, you know. And, you know, I think he could have taken the punishment all night and probably gone to the final bell. But, I think you got to give Canelo, like, a ton of credit, because everybody was saying going in that, you know, Angulo, and mostly on the basis of the effort he gave against Lara, because, you know, the great invincible Lara, he was able to, like, put him down twice and gave him some tough rounds. So a lot of people were saying, you know, Angulo's going to, you know, pressure Canelo and, you know, be able to beat him up, and he's a big puncher. And Angulo is legit, you know, a good puncher. But he's never been, you know, really, like, I mean, people were kind of, I just think, again, it's like this anti-popular fighter backlash with Canelo that, like, immediately everyone was saying how Angulo, like, looked like crap and was, like, slow and looked, you know, drained and out of it and all that stuff. And, yeah, it wasn't his best effort. I mean, that's for sure. But, you know, from the opening bell, Canelo probably did what they didn't expect him to do, which was just come out and be the aggressor and start throwing big punches and landing and was more accurate. And just really outfought him in those early rounds and set the tone. And even late in the fight when Angulo made his stand, I mean, I thought Alvarez just took his best and gave it right back even better, you know, and really just showed he was the superior fighter, you know. And I think deserves credit for taking a guy who's a tough fighter, who's given tough fights to some of the best fighters in the division, and beating him in a completely one-sided fashion, probably the clearest that Angulo's ever lost. so, like, I don't know. I just think that, you know, the reaction always tends to be, I mean, you could pick apart every fighter's best win and kind of, like, you know, a losing guy is almost never going to, like, look like he's having his best night. You know, the loser in a fight is always going to be, like, not as good as they were in their best win. So, of course, it's not like we can't say, like, Canelo beat the best version of Angulo, but he beat a version who was coming off of a really competitive fight against the guy that kind of the trendy boxing fans all rank number one in the division, in Lara. You know, and a guy who was projected to give Canelo, among boxing kind of insiders and writers and stuff, a guy who was at least projected to give Canelo a tough test, even though the odds were like 7-1, which indicated a pretty, you know, strong favorite. So I think you got to come away with it, like, really impressed with everything that Alvarez did, like his game plan and the way he executed it, and just, you know, not, I mean, I thought it was just a great outing for him and makes a fight with Lara, you know, even more appealing.
Wait, did you just say Lara?
No, I hate Lara. Dude, I don't know. I had a whole fucking, like, rant all worked out, like, last week, and then, like, just didn't happen. So I did, just wasn't even, like, ready to, like, run it back. I just hate that it's, like, Angulo, I don't know. I just think it's so funny the way perception among boxing fans and everything works, and it's always like the popular guy who's like not good. He's just like a fraud, a hype job, and all that stuff. And it's the hard luck guy who kind of came, you know, the Arislandi Lara in this case, who is this like, you know, mythically gifted defensive fighter who you'd have people are talking about in the same breath as like Floyd Mayweather. And when Lara had his greatest win, which was actually a loss against Paul Williams, that's like supposed to be some great piece of evidence, despite the fact that Paul Williams was coming off of like one of the most brutal one-punch knockouts in the last like years, you know. Not exactly like Lara gave a good fight to like a prime Paul Williams. But then Canelo beats Angulo, the same guy who 6 months ago dropped Lara twice and gave him a really tough fight, you know. Like, Canelo dominates that guy, and then it's like Angulo was shot. He wasn't the same guy.
For sure.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just perception, and like I just don't think he gets enough credit, you know, for being a good showing that he's a really good fighter. And yeah, he laid an egg against Mayweather, but he's been, you know, he's looked really good against his other best opponents, which probably would be like Trout and Angulo.
Hey, real quick, we're getting fucking hijacked by Matt Swain here. This guy will not stop DMing me. Swain.
Dude, not stop DMing you. I mean, that implies that I was ever not DMing you.
True. So what was so important that you had to interrupt our show to say it?
I don't know. You asked me to call in, so I figured I would call in.
All right, well, you guys got to fucking make the DMs public so we can see who asked who.
It was mostly like, I a little bit disagree with the Danny Garcia thing.
Which part?
Yeah, which part?
Well, speak your piece, fucko.
No, well, hey, fuck not. So, yes, he shit the bed against Mauricio Herrera, but I don't know that that's such a huge departure from what he did. I mean, if you look back at his, say, last four rounds versus Zab Judah, he absolutely shit the bed versus Judah. There is no other way to put it. The only person really that he's not sort of coasted at least a little bit against was Matisse.
Yeah, that's true.
So do you think that it's kind of what James was suggesting earlier then, that it's a little bit more difficult for Danny Garcia to prepare and get into the mindset to take on Mauricio Herrera than vice versa?
I think if Danny Garcia is not in imminent danger, he just kind of doesn't give a shit. You know, you think about, like, if you look at the Matisse fight, there was that span where he'd got Matisse's eye completely closed. And then he was coasting a little bit, and then he got his mouthpiece knocked into, what, about the sixth row? And then all of a sudden he turned it back up and went, oh, shit, yeah, this guy can actually fight.
Damn, I just remember. Now I'm going to have to go watch that, Swain, after the show.
Yeah, maybe I should
just remember how awesome that was.
I mean, when you think about it, though, he is really genuinely very talented. And I have been high on Danny Garcia as far as his talent goes for years. But, like, when he went to go fight Matisse, I said, he's going to get his ass knocked out. Because I had watched Judah and Khan and the Morales fights, and I went, he's going to coast at some point, and Matisse is going to catch him, and, yeah, he's going to get knocked out. And then Matisse knocked his mouthpiece, you know, like I said, into about the sixth row, and he went, all right, yeah, fuck this shit. I better fight the rest of this fight. And he was great.
Yeah.
But I think against Herrera, he went in soft. He said, what, this guy's not going to give me shit. And he coasted. And
do you think, like, Herrera's just, like, a good fighter, though? I mean, like, are we selling him short that maybe, like, the dude can just be competitive and maybe, like, because when he fought Alvarado, I mean, Alvarado's a pretty big junior welterweight. And I think a lot of that fight was like Alvarado just overpowered him because he's so much bigger. It's just his punches were just harder, you know? Like, Herrera was landing a lot, but when they're brawling, the dude who's like 10 pounds heavier and a bigger puncher is going to get the better of it, you know? And that was kind of what happened in that fight. And I just thought, well, if Alvarado can do that to him, a more sophisticated boxer who also has a little bit of punching power, but he'll actually set it up better. You know, I thought Garcia would have an easy time, but you know, maybe we just overlooked the guy, that Herrera is actually a good fighter.
No, I think he's better than we all think he is, and he's certainly better than I made him out to be in my preview of the fight, which was, I thought, all right, well, Garcia will just, he's going to have learned from what Alvarado and Mayfield and Provodnikov learned, and he's going to box from the outside, he'll move it inside, all right, we'll take care of the fight. And then, for whatever reason, Mauricio Herrera just really likes to fuck up your game plan. Whatever your game plan is, he wants to fuck that up. So, I mean...
And I got to give credit... I got to give credit to Paulie, too. I mean, Paulie, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many, he's turning out to be a damn good analyst and commentator, because I thought that something he pointed out during the broadcast, I mean, it's not exactly like it was some huge mystery or something nobody knows, but still, he pointed out that Mauricio Herrera didn't even start boxing until he was, you know, pretty late in the game. And that in itself, that alone, kind of, it like destroys all the constructs that these guys who have been fighting since they've been 5, 6, 7 years old have in their head, where they're throwing these combinations and punches from certain angles, moving a certain way, not because they know that's what they should be doing, but just because it's like rote repetition. They've done it so many times that that's just automatic. That's just what they do. And that's part of what makes guys that are kind of somewhat improvisational, like a Floyd Mayweather, for instance, you know, that's what makes them so great, is they're able to step outside of that mold. And in Herrera's case, it's an advantage in the sense that it's just not conventional. How do you counter that? Like, how, you don't know what he's going to do. It's like Nassim Hamed. You don't know what he's going to do next. He might throw an uppercut from 13 feet away and still fucking hit you. So it's tough to really prepare for that, and then it's even tougher to get in there and face that. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a fair point. I don't know. I was kind of trying to think of a way to describe Herrera, and I think that was a good...
Well, I mean, you look at it like this. So Herrera's 33, and Danny Garcia's 27. They both turned pro in 2007.
Yeah.
So they turned pro in the same year, but they're 8 years apart in age, or 7 years apart in age. I mean, that's a huge difference, and it's just, I mean, everything that you should have thought about Mauricio Herrera going into that fight is he's going to get his ass kicked.
Yeah,
did anybody that was reasonable not think that? I mean, it was going to be Mauricio Herrera is going to get his ass kicked. Like, oh, okay, he did well against Provodnikov, and he held his own against Alvarado and Kareem Mayfield, and then, I mean, this is Danny Garcia. He's going to get his ass kicked. And then he went in there, and he went in against a guy who has a habit of fighting down. And he didn't get his ass kicked. He fought his ass off. And I personally thought that it was really close to a draw. Like, if you had edged it either way, yeah, who cares? Man, that was a really close fight.
Well,
why do you think everybody had it so overwhelmingly for Herrera?
I didn't. I actually scored it 115-113 for Garcia.
Oh.
Hang up on him fully.
Yeah, you should just hang up on me now.
Well, let me ask this. Even if you had it for Garcia, I mean, that's a round or so away from being a draw, or maybe a two close rounds away from being a Herrera win. If they were to make a rematch in, I don't know, July or something like that, if they were to make a rematch, who would you think would be more likely to improve on their performance?
I don't think Garcia could fight worse. I really don't. I don't think he could fight more poorly than he did in that fight. That was the worst Danny Garcia I have seen as long as I've been watching him fight. I mean, that he sucked. He was terrible. He was flat-footed. He didn't jab. He didn't lead left hook. Like, there was, he didn't counterpunch. He did everything that he's not supposed to do. Like, all the shit that he's bad at, he did, and all everything that he's good at, he didn't do. So I don't know if Danny Garcia could fight worse than he did.
What do you think, James? James.
Oh, hey, what's up?
What's your perspective on it as far as who has the greater chance of, like, you know, improving on their performance?
You mean in a rematch?
Yeah, in a potential rematch.
Well, I think Danny probably, because like I said, I mean, I just think he's better, but I don't think it's a situation like Chavez and Vera, where I think in the rematch we all heavily favored Chavez because of all the circumstances in the first fight, you know, and just thinking he's a better fighter, he was totally out of you know, I don't think it was Danny was out of shape. I don't even necessarily think it was like that he didn't take Herrera that seriously, but I do think he can be better. So, and I did think Herrera was particularly inspired and just had a kind of the perfect game plan to, you know, find ways and openings to trouble Garcia. So, I would, you know, I'd favor Garcia in the rematch because I think he's more proven and has more kind of special tools to potentially, you know, change a fight, like more intangibles. I mean, we kind of know what Herrera brings to the table, and we know he's tough, but I think Danny has more than what he showed. I mean, I was really surprised that even in his more effective rounds, he never really kind of cleanly landed with his best shots.
Yeah, and I'm
and
just
he's been able to do that
echo
against most of his opponents, you know.
And to kind of echo, you know, what you guys both said, I think that it was just closer to being Mauricio Herrera's best performance and closer to being Danny Garcia's one of his, you know, crappier performances. So, you know, taking all of these things into account, putting him into some matrix and then getting some result out, I think that in reality it sucks that Mauricio Herrera lost the decision that many or most or whatever you want to call it felt that he should have won. But at the same time, going forward, and we were talking about this earlier, it might have just been better that Garcia got the decision. I mean, I know that's crazy to say, and I'm so popular on Twitter, people are just going to be going nuts. But I don't know really how else to put it. I mean, Mauricio Herrera going forward, I'm not entirely sure that he would be able to compete with other upper echelon guys. I don't know. You know, he deserves the chance. But
he's shown he can compete, you know. I mean, it's not like this was a new thing, but can he like definitively win?
Well, yes, that's a better way to put it. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
And also, you know, he's also in kind of like our boy, the sex offender, Carlos Molina, not the one who fought Amir Khan. But, you know, he's also one of those guys who, like, even when he does win, had you scored the fight for him, it wasn't the most appealing, like, eye-catching display of the sweet science. Yeah, I mean, he wasn't, like, necessarily holding and things like that, but it's just with that kind of, like, weird, like, one punch at a time and, like, very calculated, it just not really, it's not as, you know, pleasing aesthetically as, you know, the type of styles that usually captivate audiences.
For sure. Yeah, he's a tricky dude. He's tough to look good against, one of those types. But still, you know.
Yeah, I'd like to see him rematch Provodnikov. I mean, he's much better than the opponents that they're, you know, mentioning for Provodnikov.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's a pretty decent fight and probably something that's somewhat affordable for some network to put on, too, even if it's on an undercard of something. That's a fight that I think is fair, and it would be another solid payday for Herrera, hopefully. Yeah, that's not a bad one. Let's see, where were we?
There?
I don't know, actually, I didn't check.
Fuck.
Yeah, he still is.
Oh, okay.
Well, any event, I don't hear him, but where we left off before we were so rudely interrupted by that son of a bitch.
Yeah, I'm
we were talking about the...
Oh, there he is.
Oh, shit. Oh, sorry to talk about your mom. But,
yeah, well, actually, she kind of is, so...
All right, well, anyway, where we left off was, since you're with us, and we might as well just keep you on here unless you got somewhere to go. Whenever you got to go, let us know.
I actually don't, but I will bug out anytime you wish me to.
Just
write it till the bitter end.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough.
Just pause all day with us, buddy. We were talking about the Canelo Angulo card. We'd kind of gotten through the first fight anyway. I mean, what was your overall take on what Angulo looked like, what Canelo looked like, what we should be expecting going forward, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you think?
I'll pause for Foley.
No, I already talked about it.
We already pretty much
I
talked
went some
about
fucking
it, so
rambling,
you.
Like, 5-minute thing that said nothing.
Oh, all right,
so
fair
I'm
enough.
I'm not going to do it again.
Well, I thought Angulo looked like shit. But it was one of those, are we really sure he looked like shit, or did he just kind of look like Angulo after Angulo has to go too many rounds? I thought Canelo looked pretty good. You know, but anybody looks good, like, after they fought. Like, once you get embarrassed, it's really easy to not look like shit after you fight Mayweather. Because he's going to make you look slow and stupid and clueless and as though you have no tactics and you just look like a complete asshole. I mean, you're just going like a complete asshole after Mayweather. So,
yeah, but he had the best post-Mayweather performance of any of the recent fighters.
He did, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, that had been...
He picked the best post-Mayweather opponent.
Right, but at the time, I mean, Ortiz against Josecito Lopez, is that really, you know, a tougher challenge than Angulo? Or, you know, I mean, Cotto fought Austin Trout. It wasn't that... You know,
right, but then, you have to think about, like, it's Ortiz.
Yeah.
You know,
Canelo and Ortiz, like, mentally are at least very different.
That's very, very different. So, no, I was actually impressed with Canelo because his performance in general, and I didn't buy the pay-per-view because I hate Kevin Ayol, so I screened it. But, I mean, I thought it was a really disciplined approach, and the things that we had thought of that we had seen in Canelo against, like Austin Trout, where, you know, okay, he's a disciplined counterpuncher. I mean, everything that, like, he did wrong against Mayweather, he was going to be able to do right against Angulo, who just sort of showed up and threw a shitload of arm punches and looked like he had left a lot of himself in the gym. But Canelo himself, he looked really good. He looked sharp. If you worry about the 1-pound weight thing, which at this point, I think we've kind of all sort of forgotten about. I mean, so they fought their junior welterweight junior middleweight fight at 155.
Non-title bout, dude. One pound.
Yeah, so who cares? But, I mean, he looked good. His reflexes were sharp. Angulo, honestly.
You mean that horrible beating that Mayweather gave him didn't permanently damage his reflexes?
Yeah, what do you think about that? So, I mean, Angulo looked like shit.
I don't know. Yeah, he did look like shit, but, you know, like, Angulo's never been like some, like, speed demon, so, I mean, most of the time he's fought these guys
with
his big punches.
Yeah,
it's kind of been just like a timing thing, and, you know, I just thought from the get-go, just jumping in the middle of the ring and, you know, staking that ground. I mean, Canelo was the one walking forward for the first two or three rounds. You know, and that just, I think, completely threw. I didn't think Angulo was expecting to start the fight boxing off of his back foot.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the hell Virgil Hunter is doing.
No, and Virgil Hunter...
You can't turn a guy like that into a boxer.
No.
I don't even know if he was trying to, but I just meant, like, all his weird motivational shit in the corner between rounds, like, I don't know.
I mean, Virgil Hunter suggesting that he was coming on in the fight is really a little insulting to anyone who is actually watching the fight.
He's ready to go.
he's
got to pump him up.
Yeah, he wasn't.
No.
He wasn't coming on. He was getting his ass kicked. And I didn't have any problem with Tony Weeks stopping the fight. I mean, at the time it was stopped, I just kind of went, yeah, it's an inopportune moment, but all right, if he doesn't get hit anymore, all right, I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
And I'm a guy that wrote an article called Viva La Smoker, so you know that I enjoy watching people getting punched.
Yeah.
Well, as far as Virgil Hunter goes, you know, he's never going to dance again. Guilty Feet ain't got no rhythm with his careless whispers. That fucking creepy asshole. That guy's so fucking weird, man. Jesus Christ.
That's creepy as shit.
Yeah, and, well, you know what, though, as far as the stoppage goes, I was kind of disappointed in Hunter. I mean, I'm not, like, his biggest fan in the first place. I don't hate him. He's just weird. But even so, you know, he's, like, whining about how he's going to stop the fight at the beginning of the round, and then all he does is take more punches in that round. And then Hunter's like, he was coming on, man. No, he was not. He got his ass kicked. And, yeah, it was a weird stoppage. It was kind of a crappy moment to do it, but, dude, he got his fucking ass kicked for 9-plus rounds. You know?
Yeah, and
like,
and then when he's just like, you know, like, I said, if there was more than one punch in a row, I would stop it. And you stopped it after one punch, and it's like, had the fight still been going on, then it's just Canelo just throws one combination, you know, like, bam, bam, bam. Okay, there. Now is it a good time? I mean, what the fuck?
Yeah,
he was hitting him at will
on,
all night. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I thought, you know, if anyone's earned that right to make that kind of call, our man Tony Weeks. I mean, part of some of the, you know, legendary modern fights, you know, Corrales Castillo go on for that incredible comeback to come on, when a lot of fighters, a lot of refs could have stopped it after the amount of punishment, you know, Corrales had taken. So, like,
wow.
No, just that, like, nothing really. Angulo didn't really show anything that suggested that he had any opportunity to change that fight, and he had taken a pretty significant beating and is clearly one of those guys. I mean, look how much punishment he took against Kirkland and never really got knocked out, you know, just TKO'd. He can take a shitload of punches, and at a certain point it just became unnecessary. You know, the outcome was already well decided.
Yeah, I just, you know, I like the guy. He's tough not to like, and I don't want to see the guy just get the life beaten out of him, you know, in front of my very eyes.
Oh.
And like I said at the beginning, we've already seen him take a handful of beatings that, I mean, shit, dude, that Kirkland fight, while the first, like, half round was great, after round one, he just absolutely got the crap kicked out of him. Like, that was bad.
I thought we did see the life beaten out of him that fight. I'm surprised
Basically,
he even had this kind of resurgence.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, I mean, not to beat the dead horse over here, but in any event, yeah, I didn't have a problem with the stoppage for that reason alone. You know, and we've already talked about this, and I'm sorry to start martyring the guy's name because people apparently get upset about it, but after Magomed Abdusalamov, you know, I think that was kind of an eye-opener. All of these instances should be eye-openers, but that in particular was an eye-opener because it was so visible. But after that, you know, I don't think there's really any question we should really start looking at things like this and saying, let's err on the side of caution. You know, I mean, I know the fighters are going to hate it, and short-term fans are going to be like, motherfucker, he's stopping it too early. That's okay. In the long term, I'd rather see these guys go home to their families and be able to play with their children, you know?
Yeah, and people get so worked up about a stoppage and then just turn a blind eye to so much other insidious shit that happens, like, in the sport. But I thought for the reaction, for the most part, was, you know, people – I didn't think people were that anti the stoppage. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that it was Weeks, you know, because he's had a long history of making really good decisions in the ring, and he's been, like, a, you know, pretty, like, excellent referee and one of the best in the whole sport. But like you said, I mean, it's like I think that in that situation, I think it's a good thing that referees err on the side of caution. And it wasn't like some kind of, you know, hometown thing where the guy was, you know, the fight was close or he was just coming, you know, it was back and forth. I mean, it was pretty one-sided the entire time. And then, in the, you know, the eighth round, they went, it was a great round. They were going back and forth. Even then, I thought Canelo was getting the better of it, but Angulo was kind of making his, you know, best stand and having some good moments and really getting in the fight. And then the ninth, he just took a ton of – you know, a heap of punishment again. And the thing we don't see watching on TV, but, you know, the doctors were in the corner and everybody was saying, like, okay, this guy's taking, like, hundreds of punches. His face is starting to get fucked up. It's, you know, we're getting at that point where you're going to have to stop it. Hunter was talking about stopping it. So it wasn't just out of nowhere that Weeks jumped in. You know, it was getting that point, and he made the call, like, one clean punch, and you know, I got to respect it.
Yeah, agreed. Well, shit, we're getting, well, somewhat short on time, so let's zip through that undercard, because we just didn't have a chance last week to talk anything about it, even though it shouldn't take us that long to get through this shit, because it wasn't that significant. Leo Santa Cruz wind up dominating Cristian Mijares, which was pretty much as most expected, I think. I think a lot of people were looking at Mijares and saying, ah, well, you know, he's kind of a tricky guy. He's got decent movement, decent hand speed, et cetera, might be able to give Santa Cruz some rounds, especially on the heels of looking kind of average against Cesar Seda. And I think... yeah, it basically just reflected that, one, Mijares is getting older and isn't as quick anymore, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But also Leo Santa Cruz is a bit of a beast, kind of relentless, goes to the body like he's trying to kill somebody's internal organs, et cetera. So as far as Leo Santa Cruz goes, what did you guys think of the fight? Where do you think he goes now? What are the possibilities with this kid? Swain, what do you think?
I mean, as far as Leo Santa Cruz goes, I think he's pretty much the class at 122, except for, you know, that whole Guillermo Rigondo guy, who he's never going to get a fight with because Rigondo is top rank. I have heard, and by heard I mean I saw some shit on Twitter, that he might be getting Abner Morales next, in which case, awesome. Because that would be really, really fun. So, I mean, if he gets Abner Morales next, I'm really very happy with that. And I think they make him a very, very evil, violent. Nobody is moving their head or trying to play defense fight. And I think if either one of them ever were to cross that border to fight Rigondo, they both get absolutely eaten up and need to look stupid. But I think they're great as long as they stay with Golden Boy.
What say you, James?
Yeah, I agree that I think Santa Cruz's show showed that he's among the best in the division, which we kind of already knew that. But it's interesting that a lot of people were like, oh, I don't want to see another Cruz or another Santa Cruz mismatch, you know, and all this stuff. But Mijares was like one of the top five guys in the division by most ranking systems. So, you know, I think you're seeing that there's not a lot outside of those superstars like Rigondo and Donaire and Mahrez, who's, you know, kind of going between 22 and 26. What you have is a lot of these guys who are like Mijares, who was a very good fighter, has been in tons of, you know, pretty brutal fights, and is old, you know, and kind of ravaged, and fighting against a guy like Santa Cruz, who's huge for that weight, and young and in his prime and throwing 100 punches around, you know, it was going to be a really tough fight for him. And obviously, you know, but I think it's one of the best, you know, I think Santa Cruz, this was probably the best performance of his whole career, and does establish himself as, you know, number two at 122 pounds, right behind Rigondo, although I guess Donaire probably would be ranked ahead of Santa Cruz too, if that's what his weight class is. I don't know if unless he moved to featherweight. And going forward, you know, that is a potentially interesting fight with Mahrez, but I'd kind of like to see Mahrez, and I know they've tried to, but I don't know what the holdup is with the rematch with Gonzalez, because I think it to go right into a fight with Santa Cruz is not a great move, because it basically, like, you know, if Santa Cruz wins, then you can say that Gonzalez, you know, Mahrez was never the same, so that he got knocked out by Gonzalez. And he's fighting a guy coming off a knockout loss. So I think if Mahrez could reestablish himself, win that rematch, and, you know, get back to kind of where he was before that, then the fight with Santa Cruz becomes a huge fight on the Golden Boy side of the aisle. And also, yeah, it does suck that they can't fight Rigondo, because he would be the best guy in the division, you know.
And I think that I brought it up on whenever our last show was a few weeks ago, but we were talking about, you know, the potential, Gonzalez-Mares rematch that got scrapped, and I was talking about how after, after Abner Mattis versus Moreno, during the press conference, Leo Santa Cruz, he had fought on the undercard. I can't remember who it was at the moment, but anyway, he stepped up to the mic and was basically calling Mattis out, or kind of doing it from the periphery, and Abner, like, laughed. He's like, come on, you know, fight somebody and then call me out. And now we're at the point where it's like a year later, you know, and a loss later for Mattis, and now that's a realistic possibility, and I agree. That's, as far as action goes, it's tough to beat that fight.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, that Mares is great, you know, at his best, but I just don't like to see a guy get knocked out in the first round, even though it was like a TKO and he was trying to get up, but and then go right into a fight with a guy like Santa Cruz. You know what I mean? I kind of think you got to answer the question marks, either directly avenge it in a rematch, because this wasn't like a 50-50
it's a
fight
risk.
That he got knocked out. I mean, he got knocked out by a guy who was like a 10-1 favorite against, as good and
it's a
big
risk.
Puncher as
yeah.
Gonzalez is. Oh, it's risky, but I mean, to me, it's worth it. You know, people would be way more excited for Mares and Santa Cruz if Mares, you know, beats Gonzalez or gets a big win, another big win or two, and Santa Cruz keeps being undefeated.
Well, I think both are
directly
both fights
off
the loss. Running the risk of getting two losses in a row is big in today's sport. It shouldn't be, really, but it is.
It's just a bold play for Mares if he goes right against Santa Cruz, who looks to be one of the toughest, most talented, you know, a young guy in his prime, like in those weight classes. Yeah, it is risky, I guess, but I think Mares has shown, man. I mean, like, look at the schedule he's had for the last few years. Like, he's down to fight some big fights and some good fighters. Why isn't the Gonzalez rematch happening? One of them got injured, right?
Yeah, I think you actually asked on the last show, and the story was that Mattis, like, injured either a hand or a rib or something like that in sparring, and then, like, a couple days later, people who frequent that gym that he said he got injured at said that he never showed up to spar, and they were contesting that the injury was even legit and all this type of stuff.
Oh,
so,
yeah, okay. That's
you know, I'm reluctant to start calling Abner Mattis, you know, ducking anybody, because look at the guy's schedule, like you said. You know, I'm not going
to
start talking shit on the guy in that regard.
Well,
I thought it was ambitious for him to try to punch balls.
Yeah, I don't like that either. But, I thought it was ambitious for him to try to move up in weight. I think he's not that big of a guy. And it seemed like featherweight was probably, you know, about the most for him, and he wouldn't really have a significant size advantage there. So, you know, it's one thing if he just goes to 122 and says, like, okay, well, Gonzalez beat me, but he was too big for me and, you know, big puncher, and I'm going to go back to 122. But even then, I think you got to try to get, like, kind of one, like, credibility win before fighting Santa Cruz, just so that you can kind of paint that as, you know, because that is a great fight, and I just think it deserves to be painted in a better picture than even a lot, letting people be able to say, like, oh, well, one guy's coming off a knockout loss.
Yeah. Speaking of guys coming back and whatnot, the fight right before that on the pay-per-view was Jorge Linares against Nejito Arakawa. Mr. Arakawa, the guy who gave us many fun moments against Omar Figueroa, who was, of course, supposed to fight on that card, but wound up, I think, injuring his hand as well. So, basically, at least as far as I could tell, Nejito Arakawa, fun guy, super ballsy guy. I mean, you can't really say enough about the size of this guy's scrotum. It's clearly large. But he, in terms of class, he's not there. You know, seems like a nice kid and everything, gives it all, but in terms of class, he's not in the same class as even Linares, and he didn't have the type of punching power necessary to really derail Linares, even though he, you know, there were some facial cuts, and Linares is, you know, even in that regard, not looking, he's pulled out of fights before or, you know, exited early because of cuts, like against Sergio Thompson, who also fought on that card. But, I mean, I kind of want to see Nejito Arakawa in a more winnable fight, maybe on like a Friday Night Fights level or something. What do you guys think?
Yeah, yeah. Totally be down for that.
What say
you,
Swain?
I love that guy, you know?
No, I think Mihito is probably, he's probably due for a fight that he can, like, at least contend to win. Like, you know, a 50-50 fight. Not one that he's showing up to get his ass kicked on international TV.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's really been his last couple of fights. I mean, that was, well, he got his ass kicked.
Yeah, the Figueroa fight was not supposed to be, like, a, you know, anywhere near as competitive as it was, and it wasn't really that competitive.
No, it wasn't. I mean, neither one of his last couple of, I mean, you look at the Linares fight, like, all right, well, that wasn't supposed to be competitive because Linares' skin is made out of paper mache, and it wasn't. And then you look at the fight before that, which was the Figueroa fight, which was not supposed to be competitive, but and it really wasn't. The fight itself was not competitive. I don't remember saying to myself at any point, that's a Mihito Arakawa round.
No.
Well,
I mean,
just because of Figueroa, just because
Figueroa
dominated
fight, right? But Figueroa dominated the fight, and there was no point at any. I mean, there was at no point when I said, "Man, Arakawa was totally out of this." And he was really, really game. He fought his ass off, and it was a very close, one-sided fight. Whereas Arakawa was fighting his ass off every round and making it close, but losing every round.
It was more compelling to watch his bravery and, you know, masochism. But you know,
that was what it was for that fight. It really was. I mean, that was the story for that fight. Was just how
there were times parts
was.
Of Figueroa Eric were uncomfortable.
No, and it wasn't just. I mean, that fight wasn't one of those where you go, oh, my God, you've got to stop it, like, every minute. But, damn, I mean, there was no moment in any round from, say, 3 through 12 where you just didn't, you weren't in awe of how tough he is. I mean, Mihito Arakawa is just tough as nails.
Yeah, I think throw him in against, Patrick has a good idea, you know, if on, like, a Friday night fight level against somebody a lot more unproven, maybe even not necessarily even, like, a young prospect, maybe another kind of journeyman type that's just on that same level and just let him brawl.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he is, if you put him in against, like, a prospect, he's going to risk. But you put him in against somebody who, say, like, maybe 5 through 15 or 20 in that weight class in the world, yeah, you're going to get something special. But, I mean, you put him in just a prospect, really, like Linares, who's not really a prospect anymore, or Figueroa, and they're going to dominate him because they're so much more talented, but God damn, that guy is tough. And he's got some talent, but it's really the toughness aspect that when you watch the Figueroa fight, it wasn't so much, people went at the same time, they were like, oh, man, this is fight of the year. That was not even remotely fight of the year.
Yeah.
It wasn't even like a little bit fight of the year. That was so one-sided. That was Mihito Arakawa getting his ass kicked. And Omar Figueroa every round kind of going, holy shit, what do I have to do to knock this guy out?
Figueroa is still suffering the effects of that fight.
I don't know, but
on
every round, man, I don't know, but every round it would be the same thing, and it would be Arakawa coming back out, and we were all going, oh, man, this is the round of the year. And Figueroa beat the shit out of him for 3 minutes.
Yeah, it was more disturbing than a competitive, and your rendering of it, your descriptions were actually even more disturbing than the original events.
Yeah,
but when you think back, I mean, that's accurate. That is accurate.
Oh, I know.
And I've watched it 2 or 3 times because I remember thinking, and I even said, "Oh man, this is fight of the year." And then about a week later, I went back and watched it and just went, "This isn't fight of the year."
Yeah, he got his ass kicked, unfortunately.
Missing a
this
few
is so one-sided.
Like,
that was a 120-98 fight.
Yeah.
There was not a round that Erica won. That was a one-sided pass with them. But every
you know
round
what would
Arakawa
be fun? You know what would be fun? Put Nihito Arakawa in against Ji-Hoon Kim on Friday Night Fights.
That would be scary.
That shit would be fun. I mean, it would be sloppy, and it would be like, you know, they would like combine to throw like combine to land about 7% of their punches total. But that shit would be fun. It would be a lot of just throwing leather.
Yeah, that would be like the Radies Watch most epic Friday Night Fight.
Wait a second. Did somebody say rabies watch?
I put the lime in the coffee, I mix watch. It all up. I put the lime in the coffee, I drink it all down.
Oh, yeah. I will utilize that shit. I will.
Oh, yeah. Good old Teddy.
Oh, man. Love him. Shit, well, let's see. There were some other developments in boxing.
Wait, Melina Charlo. What about the Melina Charlo fight?
Didn't happen.
Why not?
Melina's still in jail.
Melina is never going to be heard from ever again.
He is still in jail, and from what
really,
I'm really
glad I tried to back that fuck just because he was from Chicago.
From what I'm hearing, he's having a bigger issue with the immigration status than he is with the failing to register as a sex offender. I mean, I'm definitely not an expert in either. Yeah, well, I'm definitely not an expert in either regard. Well, maybe the sex offender thing, but I mean, it sounds to me like this whole issue with him and immigration is significant, and he's still in jail. They're still trying to get him out and can't get him out. So, yeah, I feel bad actually for Charlo because that was a big step up and a potential opportunity to really, you know, polish himself a bit. But
well, it could have been it could have been bad for him too, but.
True.
I guess you never know how that was going to play out.
True.
I think Melina's done.
Might be if he can't get out of jail.
By done, I mean possibly incarcerated for 10 years or something.
Well, he's going to be fighting either Wesley Snipes or Ving Rhames any fucking day now. You know, that's all
what
I know.
Was the boy from the '80s who was like what was that guy's name? James Scott, who was on it, fought from prison on HBO. Could do one of those deals.
Oh man, James Page, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Is that I think so. Wait, no. He fought like
I know
like a light heavyweight in the light heavyweight in the early '80s.
Yeah, I know James Page went to prison, but well, anyway. Yeah, it's a crappy situation, and you know, I was kind of talking shit. I mean, it's kind of easy to talk shit about somebody who's a sex offender, I guess, but it turns out that it was stemming from some shit where, like, he was 18 and the chick that he was sleeping with was 16.
Well, I heard conflicting on that, so it's probably best we just don't even comment on it, because I thought that too at first, and then there's, like, a Las Vegas Journal review article that says, like, that the girl was 13, so I don't know, man. I'm not going to touch it.
Well, either way, I hope it was nothing like that.
He was 18 whenever it happened, so it's not like he was really he was also like a teenager when it happened, but I don't know any of the details.
Yeah.
There was a couple different conflicting reports. The point is, like, he's pretty much fucked because of the immigration thing, so it doesn't really matter.
That's my understanding on it.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it was James Scott, and that was who beat Eddie Gregory, who then went on to be Eddie Mustafa Muhammad,
yeah.
And, like, beat the ever-loving shit out of him, and then went on to lose to Dwight Muhammad Kawi, whose original name I haven't bothered to look up.
Well, shit, who was it a couple years ago?
I just found it. It's Dwight Braxton.
Yeah.
Who was it a couple years ago that fought with the fucking ankle bracelet? That was, shit. He fought Yori Boy Campus in some kind of like circus sideshow type of fight not long ago, or I don't know. But anyway, it was on either Friday Night Fights or like Fox Sports Net or something like that, maybe 10 years ago. And there was this big to-do about it because he was put in jail for some sex crime and then was like fighting on the card, on a televised card, with the ankle bracelet thing on his ankle. I mean,
fuck me, boxing. Thanks, dude. Thanks for making us all look good. Anyway.
Yeah. So you're saying there's hope for Melina?
It sounds like
Melina,
it.
Melina Canelo from Rikers Island.
Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, but you know what was also awesome about that was how, like, one of the Charlos, or I guess whoever the Charlo who was fighting Melina, then became convinced
Jamal.
That it was all like a, just like a, like they just, like, it was all fake and they just did that to avoid having to fight him so they could make Canelo Melina. Did you see any of that stuff? He was convinced
yeah.
it was all a conspiracy and, like, Melina wasn't really in jail or wasn't really, like, being, you know, about to spend.
Yeah, if you're
going to
do that, if you're going to do that, you're going to be like, he's in jail for tax fraud, not he's in jail for sexual assault or some shit. I mean, come on. That is some career-ruining shit.
Well, it's pretty crazy if you start reading, but it's kind of, the sources are, like, vague, and it's hard to know exactly what the real stories were on any of the stuff involving Melina, but it sounds like he basically got, like, deported and then just, like, came back to the country illegally and had been here the entire time as, like, you know, with a felony conviction that's, you know, where he'd been deported, and he was just here the entire time. It's not like he was hiding. I mean, he's been on TV. He was on the fucking Mayweather-Canelo undercard. You know, and he fought on TV a bunch of times, HBO, ESPN, and it's just weird that it's like 3 days before that fight, it was just kind of like, oh, hey, you're that guy, you know, come with us.
He was basically just biding his time so that he can go over and grind on Bundridge's wife at a Mayweather card.
Yeah.
That's all he's doing.
Yeah, I somehow get the impression that it's not particularly that hard to get into the U.S., but then if do something fucked up in the U.S., they're like...
They weren't, like, actively looking for him, though, obviously.
Right,
they could have detained him at any point in the last, like, 10 years.
Right.
Well,
I mean,
5 years or whatever.
Something random happened. They're like, yeah, we better check your ID. Hang on.
My theory...
You're a deviant.
My theory is that the Charlos have another twin brother that nobody knows about that works for immigration. And then as soon as they fucking found out they were going to be fighting Melina, he was like, uh-uh. He put the stamp down, dude. He called his buddies over in the other immigration office, and that shit was done. That's my theory. So you guys can go ahead and print
that.
What
they put the Watsons for, then?
That's a good point.
Man,
whatever,
I mean,
guys.
How many Watsons are there, really?
I don't know.
There are multiple Watsons.
There really are. It's getting scary.
Watsons. Yeah, it's creepy.
Yeah,
is it
we're
creepier
see more and more
like,
of them.
Is it creepier than Al Haymon's smile? Probably not.
No, and if you look at that
picture...
Did
you guys read the one about the FBI, like, investigating Golden Boy for... And that thing about, like, Al Haymon with, like giving Canelo $5 million to forfeit again, to, like, basically just, like, not throw any punches against Mayweather? There's some good stuff online if you want to get down
with
some of the conspiracy theories.
There's
like a big one about like what?
I said clearly I haven't been reading enough.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on Al Haymon basically being involved with this like Eyes Wide Shut-esque like, you know, sex ring where he's just like this like, you know, ancient Greek guy just banging like everything that he's ever met, male or female, and that's why he never shows up in public because like he doesn't want his lovers to recognize him, to expose him.
No,
that's what I was reading, man. The same article that said that he gave Mello the $5 million, so it's obviously a you know trustworthy source.
Oh, clearly, TMZ
That's creepy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
Haymon is like Alexander the Great, basically, in terms of his sexual tastes.
Oh, man. Well, that's actually, make that into a movie. I'll watch it. Whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty horrible.
Speaking
of sex offenders.
Who's going to play Ellerby?
I'm voting for you.
No, thank you.
We just put James Foley in blackface.
Woo!
that we're onto something. Potentially getting banned out of this podcast. That we're onto something.
Hey, tell that Bob Arum joke again.
Fuck that. I'm not doing it. Not touching it. Get blacklisted. Let me ask you guys. Marquez versus Alvarado. Apparently this was made. Juan Manuel Marquez versus Mike Alvarado. What are our preliminary thoughts on this?
I'm down, like, action-wise, but I think it's kind of weak that, I mean, you know, Marquez, I guess, has earned his position to kind of call his shots, but, you know, we have to be fair the same way we'd criticize Mayweather, and, you know, as for Marquez, to me, you know, Pacquiao lost that fight, got knocked out. You know, he fought Rios, right, which, you know, was also coming off of a loss. But Marquez is coming off of, like, the biggest win of his career, and now he's fighting a guy who just got his ass beat by Provodnikov, you know. So even though I think the fight probably will end up delivering as far as action, and I like Alvarado as a guy, I'm happy that he's getting a good payday and all that. It'd be nice if Marquez was fighting the winner of that fight. You know, I think we'd all be a lot more excited. You know, as it is, it kind of amounts to what they're saying, basically, like, you know, the winner of this will get the winner of Bradley and Pacquiao. Well, what the fuck happened? What about Provodnikov? You know. Why does he get left out in the cold? He's like the most exciting fighter of the group. Obviously, he doesn't have the star power of Marquez and Pacquiao, but, you know, I just think that I can't get that excited about it when there's just a great opponent. I mean, I think Provodnikov and Marquez would be awesome. Even though it's a style that's usually tailor-made for him, I just think Provodnikov's shown he's a different breed. And, you know, at this stage of Marquez's career and all the factors considered, I think that would be a really exciting fight. And I think Provodnikov would have a great chance.
You know, I love
Alvarado,
Marquez.
I think he's a big underdog.
I love Marquez. I'm in that camp where, you know, he just seems – he's a good fighter. He's kind of a funny guy, and he's – I don't know. I like him. But as far as, like, when it comes to picking his opponents and stuff like that, I don't know what the issue is. I don't know what it is because, you know, he talks like he's – you know, he's above fighting Pacquiao again. He's not about to fight Rios. He doesn't want to fight Provodnikov. But for whatever reason, Mike Alvarado makes sense to him. And I'm just like, what's the line of thinking behind this? I don't really get it. I mean, from, like you said, from an action standpoint, it'll probably wind up being a pretty good fight. But I don't really understand.
Well, that's the thing, dude. It'll be a good fight, but so would Provodnikov, so would Rios, so would, you know, Pacquiao. They all would be good fights. But competitively, I mean, especially, I mean, Rios and Alvarado kind of even, and they, of course, were, you know, 1-1 against each other. And I think Rios has taken a lot of punishment and probably slowing down a little bit. But, man, Alvarado took a frightful beating against Provodnikov. And it's just hard to imagine he's going to be better, you know, all of a sudden.
I think he probably listens to Nacho a little too much.
Yeah.
And when I say he listens to Nacho a little too much, it's, you know, they turned down whatever it was, $1 million or $2 million for the Pacquiao rematch.
Yeah.
He'd fight Chris John for whatever it was, like $30,000.
It was like $30,000 or something.
In Indonesia.
Yeah.
So the fight that, and I've watched that like, I don't know, maybe a half dozen times, and I'm a huge, huge Marquez homer.
He waited too long. In the fight.
I mean, that fight's maybe a draw.
Yeah, he waited too long. He waited around too much.
I mean, when you look at, like, Alvarado, you go, all right, well, there's a guy that he could probably outbox. But, I mean, Marquez is really still pretty much a lightweight.
Yeah.
He really is. He is, because he came into whatever it was, like, the fourth Pacquiao fight, the same that he came into the second Pacquiao fight. So when he walked into the ring, he was like 148 or 146.
Was Mayweather really a lightweight, though? Is Pacquiao a lightweight? I mean, I don't know. All those guys are like 140.
I think all three of them can make lightweight.
I genuinely do.
I think all three of those guys could make lightweight. I think they are really, really big lightweights that are just beating the shit out of welterweights because they can.
Well, I think in some cases, like Floyd, I think it helps that he's not worrying about his weight at all. He doesn't have to rehydrate, none of that shit.
Yeah, and I think it's that case for all three of them is that they go, all right, well, you know, I'll make 142 or 143 or whatever it is, and then they walk in the ring at 148. But, you know, I mean, who gives a shit? I mean, Mike Alvarado is huge. You've met me, Foley. You know how big I am. Like, Mike Alvarado is my size. And then he has to boil down to make whatever it is, 140 or 143, and he has to die. Like,
he's huge for a junior, he looks like
yeah,
he is literally my size. He is 5'10" or 5'11". He's gigantic. And then he has to boil down to make that weight. So when the Marquez team says we're going to do this at 143,
what weight are they
like,
are they fighting at?
Yeah, 143. No, it's 143.
Oh, it's like a catch weight thing. So that would be better for Alvarado because he'll get 3 extra pounds than what he's used to.
Yeah, but okay, so it's like 3 less pounds of death.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Mike Alvarado is a welterweight.
Plus, you got
to
also imagine he probably
had to spend
a lot of time outside out of the gym after that last fight. I mean, it probably took him 2 months.
Right. Well, Andy's always getting into trouble.
Right, yeah, and Mike Alvarado is not Juan Manuel Marquez, who is never above, say, maybe 155.
Marquez is just a better fighter. He's a more professional and all that. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a big favorite. But I don't know, man. Alvarado is actually, like, a really compelling dude, you know, and he's one of the most, like, articulate fighters in the whole sport, I think. And I really enjoy – it's funny because I think his personality, it doesn't reflect at all, like, everything you read about with all of his, you know, outside-the-ring criminal problems.
Some of which weren't necessarily his fault.
You know, I mean, not – I don't know exactly what he did. But, like, you know, he got stabbed. I mean, that's not – can't blame the man for that.
No, and that's not to say that Alvarado's not an intelligent guy, that he's not a compelling person. I mean, a compelling personality, he absolutely is. But, I mean, Mike has a – he has a genuine affinity to get himself into shit, whether it's ditching a SUV into a lake or somehow winding up with, like, 40 frisk stitches for no apparent reason.
I don't know the guy, but it sounds to me like he likes the booze. And trust me, I like the booze. I like the fucking booze. But it sounds like he gets a little excessive with it, and that might even account for why he's having such an issue making weight. I know he's big, but, I mean, there have been taller, you know, longer guys that have made that weight before. Anyway, yeah, it's a weird fight to me. And as far as the weight goes, I don't really understand the whole catchweight business, especially with Marquez complaining about catchweights previously. I don't really understand. But
no one was really demanding this fight, you know, and that's another thing. Kind of like, if you're going to fight somebody on that level, do it like an up-and-comer who's not proven yet, who's undefeated or something, who we know is not really going to be that good and you'll beat. But at least there's some kind of mystery. I mean, yeah, Alvarado, we know him, but it's like he just doesn't deserve to be on this level after the Provodnikov fight. If he wanted to continue, I mean, he has every right to continue his career, but it's really fortunate for him to be able to just launch right into a fight with Marquez where you assume he's going to get another big payday. And, hey, great, good for him. But it's from fans, it's just kind of, it's a little bit head-scratching, you know?
Yeah.
I think for Marquez, it's who else are you going to fight that's, you know, with top rank for that money?
Yeah.
For the same money you can fight Provodnikov.
It's like, yeah, fight the dude.
Who the hell wants to do that? Like, really, who wants to do that? Or you can fight, you know, you can maybe fight Pacquiao again, but you got to build all that shit up, or you can fight Rios.
Let's wrap this shit up. We got like a minute left. Just throwing it out.
All right, gents.
Well,
thanks for calling in.
All
right,
I'm gonna shut the fuck up. I'll let you guys talk.
We enjoy hearing from you.
It was a good surprise guest. Thank you. Thank you for calling in. Anyway, yes, good show today. Thanks, everybody. There was a couple more things that I wanted to talk about, but whatever. There will be plenty of time to talk about it in the meantime. Chisora Fury 2, let's see, Martinez Cotto, we got time to talk about that, all that type of stuff. We'll get to that shit in coming shows. Oh, yeah, and Frosch Grows too, of course. So next week, next couple weeks, something like that, we'll get to that. Swain, thanks for calling in. Everybody who does not already follow him or doesn't know him, his handle on Twitter is HansLonda0351. Look for him on there. Foley is the real FOL. I'm Voice of Beard because I just changed it. I write for QueensburyRules.com. Foley writes for BadLeftHook.com. Swain writes with us at QueensburyRules.com. We out. Thanks, everybody. Take it easy.
Thanks for having me on again, guys. Later.